From NPR and WBUR Boston, I'm Meghna Chakrabarty, and this is On Point. We're going to spend the hour today with former U.S. Poet Laureate Tracy K. Smith, and she's joining us from Princeton, New Jersey. Tracy, welcome to On Point.
Thank you.
It is so great to have you, I have to say. And I just wonder if we can set a mood here and start off with you actually just reading one of your poems for us?
Of course.
Okay, how about Political Poem?
Great. If those mowers were each to stop at the whim, say, of a greedy thought, and then the one off to the left were to let his arm float up, stirring the air with that wide, slow, underwater gesture, meaning, hello, and you there, aimed at the one more than a mile away to the right. And if he, in his work, were to pause, catching that call by sheer wish, and send back his own slow, one-armed dance, meaning, yes, and here, as if threaded to a single long nerve, before remembering his tool and shearing another message into the earth, letting who can say how long graze past until another thought, or just the need to know, might make him stop and look up again at the other, raising his arm as if to say something like, still, and oh, and then to catch the flicker of joy rise up along those other legs and flare into another bright yes that sways a moment in the darkening air. Their work would carry them into the better part of evening, each mowing ahead and doubling back, then looking up to catch sight of his echo, sought and held in that instant of common understanding, the God and speed of it coming out only after both have turned back to face the sea of yet and slow. If they could, and if what glimmered like a fish were to dart back and forth across that wide, wordless distance, the day, though gone, would never know the ache of being done. If they thought to, or would, or even half wanted, their work, the humming human engines pushed across the grass, and the grass, blade after blade assenting, would take forever. But I love how long it would last.
How long it would last. Mm-hmm. What is it that's lasting in this poem?
Oh. I think it's a desire to connect to someone who is doing their job, which is, I think, their life, in tandem with you, even though that person might be a stranger, even though that person might have only one or two things in common with you, if that. It's a poem that's seeking community.
It's called Political Poem.
When I first wrote this poem, it was called The Mowers, and it was a kind of a strange encounter for me as a writer. The poem, some lines from the poem woke me up from sleep, and I thought, oh, if I wake up, I can capture them. And for a long time, it lived as The Mowers. And then I read the poem in Washington, D.C. just about 5 years ago, and I said, oh, no, this is a political poem. That's what I'm going to call it.
About two people across a divide actually doing quite similar things and wishing for that long, slow connection?
I mean, yeah. I mean, it's a poem about an impossible kind of listening, too, right? These people are a mile away, and yet they feel one another, and they want to call out to that. And I think that wish that that we might truly sense and feel and be listening for one another is something that feels vital to citizenship.
So this is exactly why we wanted to talk to you today.
Yeah, okay.
Because I should just remind folks that Political Poem is from Wade in the Water, your collection. And you won the Pulitzer Prize a while ago for Life on Mars, another poetry collection. You served two terms as U.S. Poet Laureate, 2017 to 2019. And originally, as you know, we wanted to talk to you right at the beginning of this new year, right? This new decade. That's what we had booked you. But as we all woke up on January 2nd, we were wondering if we were going to be on the brink of another war. So the news actually definitely interfered with that. And I'm so glad that you could be here with us now. Because, in fact, that moment, January 2nd, the very beginning of the start of 2020, I'm just wondering, how did you feel about that moment? How did you make sense of how we started this decade?
Oh, wow. As I get older, I feel I find myself having more fear about the world because I'm thinking about my children. And that moment where it felt like we could descend into something really perilous really frightened me. And I started thinking, okay, what if, you know, what's important? What do I want my children to know and think about if this is the direction that we find ourselves in, moving in?
Well, for folks listening today, I think maybe a lot of you have that same feeling resonating internally because everything seems to be moving so urgently and so fast. So the question I want to ask all of us listening together, I mean, you talked about an impossible kind of listening, actually, in political poetry, but all of political poem, but all of us listening together, I'm curious, and I want to hear from you, if from listeners, if we can find space and peace and common ground in poetry. And what do you think it is about? This is how it occurs to me, that like poetry are words that are trimmed down, right? They're very spare. They're assembled into a particular kind of verse. And why that so transports us. And for any listener out there who also might feel that poetry isn't accessible to them, I want you to call us too, because we have the former U.S. Poet Laureate here to be our guide today. Now, Tracy, you spent in your 2 years as U.S. Poet Laureate doing something very specific. You traveled everywhere you could. Why?
Well, I wanted to see if poems could help us to do this thing, to care, to wonder, and to be beholden to something together. I feel that we live in this other mode. Not only is poetry not central to most people's day-to-day lives, but the default mode that we find ourselves in is explanatory, defensive, and argumentative. And perhaps it's also self-ennobling. You know, our opinions, our reactions, our ratings of other things are so important, or so we've been led to believe. What I like about poems is that they pull us out of that kind of certainty, out of that kind of assumption mindset, and they ask us to really listen to what is being said, to follow another vocabulary and imagination, and to find a kind of sense there that's perhaps new and strange.
How does poetry do that? I mean, this is, maybe it's one of those inexplicable mysteries, but I've always wondered.
Well, I don't think it's that mysterious. I mean, great poems do put us in touch with something that does feel large and mysterious, but the way poems behave, I think, is not so confounding. Poems are using sound, sense, rhythm, energy, everything at their disposal to move and speak to the reader, to say, this is not just something I want you to imagine as second or third hand. I want you to feel this with me. And so let me see if I can make you smell something or taste something, or let me see if I can give you an association that seems to come from a weird place, but that will speak to the feelings and the senses that are central to what I'm trying to share.
I'm sorry to jump in here, but in your body of work, the one that stays with me at the very, very top of the show, at the billboard at the top of the hour, I read a line from one of your poems from Life on Mars. It's a poem about the first images that came back from the Hubble telescope and your father's work on that. And there's that line I read that you write, "We saw to the edge of all there is, so brutal and alive, it seemed to comprehend us back." I have never forgotten that from the moment I read it. It shook me to my core. How did you know to put that word comprehend? That, to me, everything's in that one word.
Oh, thanks for hearing that word and feeling something that's as troubling and maybe even consoling as what I was searching for.
Absolutely. Absolutely consoling. To me, I take from that this notion that even in the blankness or something that feels as empty as space, we can find a kind of comprehension. That's what shook me.
I think it's what we need and what we hope. I wrote that poem in grief for my father who had recently died. And so that desire to not only feel like I could reconnect with the man that I knew, but to hope or need to believe that he was larger than his human self. And instead of feeling worry or judgment or anxiety toward me, his daughter, he would just know. He would understand. And to imagine that there's something out there with that capacity, it felt really helpful.
Mm. Now, in the place, we've just got 30 seconds left before we have to take a little break here, the vagaries of a live radio. Mm-hmm. But getting back to your travels across the United States, can you just kind of briefly list some of the places you went, like all over, right?
Oh, yeah. I'll try Alaska, Louisiana, South Carolina, Maine, South Dakota, and elsewhere, mm-hmm. many other elsewheres, and lots of communities within those places.
So we're going to hear more about the experiences you had, the people that you met, and the responses to poetry in all of these places. We're talking this hour with Tracy K. Smith. She served two terms as U.S. Poet Laureate from 2017 to 2019. She's a Pulitzer Prize-winning poet as well. And we want to hear from you in this time of political cacophony. Do you turn to things like poetry to find a silence, a kind of silence that makes more sense, maybe, than all the information that's constantly surrounding us? We'll be right back. This is On Point.
Support for the On Point podcast comes from Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform that lets you find candidates fast. Ditch the busy work and use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. And listeners get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/onpoint. That's Indeed.com/onpoint. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
This is On Point. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. We are spending this hour with Tracy K. Smith. She is the former U.S. Poet Laureate. She served in that position from 2017 to 2019. She's also a Pulitzer Prize-winning poet as well, author of several collections of poetry, including Life on Mars, Wade in the Water, and she's also author of the memoir Ordinary Light. She's a professor of humanities, creative writing, and chair of the Lewis Center for the Arts at Princeton University. And we're talking with Tracy today because we all kind of felt like we needed to create a bit of space to help us understand, a little bit of quiet, to help us understand where we are, who we are with each other at this moment in American history. And during her term as Poet Laureate, Tracy K. Smith traveled across the country to have exactly those conversations through the vehicle of poetry with everyday Americans. And Tracy, I'm wondering if you could just tell us a little bit of some specific things about what you experienced. Like, for example, you went to Kentucky, right?
Mm-hmm.
And what happened there?
I visited a community center where there were people who had come from, you know, different communities, sometimes a few hours away, out of interest in poetry or curiosity about this this event. And I visited the next day a men's addiction rehab center where people were not necessarily there by choice and where talking about poems that might have been about love or about family spoke to them in ways that were sometimes similar to what had happened the night before in the community center, and sometimes profoundly different because they gave these people access to new terms for thinking about addiction and what the effect of that had been privately and then maybe in terms of the relationships that they had.
Mm. Well, some of these places that you went with, I guess, staff from the Library of Congress, right? And they recorded interviews with the Americans who came to these events.
Right.
And we have a little bit of tape from that. I'm so glad that this is stored in the Library of Congress. So here, I just want to play a moment from the exact location you were just talking about. So this is Philip Justice, program director at the Men's Addiction Recovery Campus in Bowling Green, Kentucky. And he spoke to the Poetry and Literature Center about the men who are at the Recovery Center and how poetry is helping them.
In recovery, that's one thing. You really learn about a lot about yourself, about your inner self, about your feelings. And I think that directly relates to poetry and what they were hearing in there. And I think it engaged some of the senses and maybe got the thoughts going. And yeah, it was great to hear them speak on that.
So that's Philip Justice at the Men's Addiction Recovery Campus in Bowling Green. And it was a slightly different event than what you were talking about here. But Tracy, I think if I remember correctly, there was, for example, was there someone who was at one of these events who talked about how they had read a poem that was ostensibly about love, but reframed it in his life in terms of his relationship regarding his drug addiction?
Oh, yeah. We read a poem by a poet named Laura Kosiski, and it was a poem that was reflecting on an old love that was gone. The feeling that had been so alive was now gone. And we talked about it, and someone said, "Look, I know this is a poem about love. I recognize that. But what I'm really being made to recognize is that my addiction was a kind of love affair that I had. And what I'm dealing with now is the aftermath of that." And I guess that was the first time that he had framed that to himself in that way, which seemed so moving. I mean, it was a room of 100 men, and I doubt that being in a space like that is always comfortable. And I doubt that one is always eager to feel and be seen as vulnerable. But I was so moved by the deeply personal and vulnerable places people were willing to go in talking about how these poems spoke to them about their experience.
And did you find that in every one of these places that you went?
I think that happens to different levels across the board when you're in a room where people are really engaged and feel safe with one another. And that's what was really exciting to me, because I got invited into that mode as well. I didn't feel myself to be a teacher up there saying, this is how you read a poem, but rather, this is what I'm hearing right now. And this is what your description of the poem's meaning to you has activated in me. That was really exciting, because we don't often find ourselves in that position. And we don't often find ourselves in the position where the thing that we're all gathering around is this analog technology, you know, just words on a piece of paper, a voice in the air. And that also felt it felt really meaningful at a time when we're plugged in and we're plugged into things that other people aren't even thinking about or aren't even sharing with us.
So they're, of course, more than just words on a piece of paper, right? I mean, the key thing in what you're describing, these events you're describing, is, yes, they're words on a piece of paper or voices in the air, but people in the same room, right? Mm-hmm. Experiencing that moment together. That makes all the difference, doesn't it?
Yeah, it really does. Because what happens, you get past the fear of newness. You get past the first hazy impression, and then you allow yourself to venture toward what might feel deeper, shakier, but also extremely true and honest. And then there's someone else in the room who says, yes. Or there's someone who says, well, I hadn't thought of it that way. This is how I've thought of it. I miss those kinds of conversations. Mm-hmm. I don't know when they stopped feeling so central to day-to-day life, But being on these trips and being in, you know, rooms full of people who were basically strangers to me made me feel so so grateful and so nostalgic. It was as though we'd gone back in time a little bit.
I don't know when we stopped either. I mean, I'm just thinking. I don't have an answer to that question, and yet I think it feels that way to so many people, right? And this issue came up again. I'm going to play a little bit of tape from what was recorded at one of the events that you held in Kentucky in March of 2018, because there was an audience member, I think, who talked about how all that technology and kids growing up with so much digital technology and even a reliance on it, it worried them, and how maybe creating spaces like we're talking about for just thinking about something as analog as poetry in a book might make a big difference. But here's that audience member.
I'm worried that they're so buried in their computers and their technology that they'll forget what it is to sit outside, play in the mud, just... Kids, when we were kids, we didn't have that. We played outside longer. Childhood lasted longer. Mm-hmm. It wasn't influenced by the outside so much, the technology.
Yeah.
But then again, they've got such a wider view of the world, too, that we didn't have. I'd have never dreamed of China or anything like that when I was little, you mm-hmm. know? We were too busy playing in the weeds, you know, the woods, splashing in the river, you know?
Yeah.
But now they see more of the world as well. So it's kind of, it's got to be a balance and act, and I don't know how we're going to get there.
What were you thinking?
Oh, gosh. Yeah. I think of that woman's voice, to be honest, just about every week as I have children. Mm. And the question I asked, because I was so astonished by how beautiful Kentucky was, with the hills and this undeveloped land and horses and little farms everywhere. And so I said, you know, I'm really discovering something about this country and how beautiful it is and how distinct one place is from another. What does it mean to you to live in a place like this? And so we started out there, and she was thinking about the gifts that, you know, being connected have given her kids, but also this sense of loss, that this is a relationship to earth and space and time that might not be as emphatic in the kids. Mm-hmm. And I think we feel that in different ways depending on where we are. It was meaningful also that she understood there's a trade-off. Mm-hmm. I love, you know, she said, I didn't know anything about China when I was a kid. And yet there's the mud. And
I mean, so speaking of children, okay, I'm just affirming everything you're saying, because I spend most of my time in a city, and when I have a chance to get myself and my kids out of the city, there's the moment of transition for them, I have to say, when they kind of look around like, are we supposed to be able to run around? Like, yes. Yes, you are. go out there and be free. But regarding kids, at that same event, right, in Kentucky, something else happened. A young girl came in by herself.
There was a little girl who was probably around 8 or 9, which was the same age as my daughter at the time. And she was sitting in the front row of this morning conversation, and she was by herself. She was listening the whole time. And then there came a moment where she raised her hand to ask a question. And, you know, she wanted to know, like, when I realized that I was a writer, when I realized that I had stories to tell. And I answered her question, but I sensed that she was asking because she felt that she had stories to tell. And she talked a little bit about her life, and she did have stories to tell. And I think it'll be really meaningful to her to find ways that language can bring her into a new kind of understanding and even sense of power about her life and her environment, which is how I feel that, you know, language can function for all of us. But it was really exciting to be able to be the person in the room to say, you can do this. I was a kid just like you, and I wanted to disappear inside the lives and voices of other people. And doing that helped give me a vocabulary for making sense of my own life, mm-hmm. my own experience. It made me realize, too, how much of a lifeline community libraries are for people.
Yeah.
Wasn't her first time there. The librarian said she's there every day, and it's kind of a home away from home for her. And it's a small enough community where the librarian can kind of watch out for the kids who come in and say, oh, here's a book that I think you might like. And those relationships can be life-saving.
She came in, which she had her house key around her neck.
Latch key kid, okay. Is what I used to say.
Well, listen, I have been monopolizing this conversation with you, so let me let our listeners in. Okay. We're spending the hour with Tracy K. Smith. She's the former U.S. Poet Laureate. She's talking to us about her travels that she undertook over the 2 years that she served as Poet Laureate across the United States, really bringing poetry, talking about poetry to the quieter corners of the country, and what she learned and what we can all learn. Let's go to Katie, who's calling from Detroit, Michigan. Katie, you're on the air.
It's a great pleasure to speak to Tracy, and I'd like her to know that I spend 5 or 10 minutes with her every morning on her newsletter, The Slowdown. And I'd like to give a big shout out for that. And this morning it was snowflakes, and here in Michigan, I'm well acquainted with snowflakes, and it was by Longfellow. But every morning I usually forward one of her poems to friends of mine, and I'm delighted to have that connection and to give high praise to Tracy and know that she's being heard all over the world.
Well, Katie, thank you. And Tracy, before I let you respond, let me just go turn to Arthur, who's calling from Riverton, West Virginia. Arthur, are you a fan of The Slowdown as well?
I am definitely a fan of The Slowdown, and I became enamored with poetry because of it. And West Virginia Public Broadcasting broadcasts The Slowdown 2 times a day. It's wonderful. And Tracy works so well and explains it. It's just a wonderful setup, and I really, really appreciate it. She has a beautiful voice. She gives her impression or understanding of what the poem means, and then she reads it. It's fantastic.
Thanks for listening to that.
Arthur, what difference has it made to you in hearing Tracy K. Smith do all that? It's a podcast, right? Is this Slowdown?
Yeah, it's a podcast that also airs on certain affiliated stations, and it's short. It's 5 minutes, so I spend the first 3 minutes in some sort of a reflection about some aspect of life or maybe even history that connects in some way with the poem. And what I imagine that I might be doing is opening up a space for a listener to receive the poem, on the go, perhaps.
It helps me immensely to understand how poetry works. And I'm so happy to be able to say this and tell Tracy how much I appreciated what she has been doing with The Slowdown.
Oh, thank you. That means so much to hear from you.
Arthur, thank you so much for that call. Let's sneak in another one here. Let's go to James, who's calling from Hattiesburg, Mississippi. James, you're on the air.
Hello, and may I say it's an honor, ma'am.
Hi, James. Nice to hear you, meet you.
I would like to say that, or ask your opinion on the idea of poetry as prayer or mantra. And in particular, I'm thinking about a poem by Nixon Waterman that's very close to my heart called If I Knew You. And I try to use this poem. It's if I knew you and you knew me, if both of us could clearly see and with an inner sight divine the meaning of your heart and mind, I think that we would differ less and clasp our hands in friendliness. Our thoughts would pleasantly agree if I knew you and you knew me. And that poem is something I try to keep in mind and recite upon meeting a new person or dealing with a person who I am having a difficult time with, if we're at odds.
Mm-hmm. That's beautiful. And yeah, imagine if all of us lived with that poem in our hearts or just at the tip of our tongue. I do think that poems urge us to do the difficult work of listening and also empathizing, whatever that means for you in whatever the situation is, to say, what does this other perspective stem from? How might I understand and respect it better? That's a great practice.
Well, James, thank you so much for that call. We're talking this hour with Tracy K. Smith, former U.S. Poet Laureate. Listening to her about what she learned in the 2 years that she spent as Poet Laureate traveling across the country, bringing poems and poetry to the quieter corners of this nation, this is On Point. This is On Point. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. We're talking this hour with Tracy K. Smith. She's the former U.S. Poet Laureate. She served as Poet Laureate from 2017 to 2019. She's also the Pulitzer Prize-winning author of Life on Mars, her early poetry collection, and author of Wade in the Water as well. She's a professor of humanities, creative writing, and chair of the Lewis Center for the Arts at Princeton University. And we're trying to slow down a little bit this hour, trying to quiet down a bit to see what we can learn in those rich silences that Tracy K. Smith says we explore when we do things like engage with poetry. So, Tracy, if you could, I'd love if you could read something else for us. This is out of maybe a poem out of the American Journal, 50 Poems for Our Time, which is a selection of poems that you edited, right?
Right. Mm-hmm. This is a poem by Jericho Brown called Enem. They said to say goodnight and not goodbye. Unplugged the TV when it rained. They hid money in mattresses so to sleep on decisions. Some of their children were not their children. Some of their parents had no birth dates. They could sweat a cold out of you. They'd wake without an alarm telling them to. Even the short ones reached certain shelves. Even the skinny cooked animals too quick to catch. And I don't care how ugly one of them arrived, that one got married to somebody fine. They fed families with change and wiped their kitchens clean. Then another century came. People like me forgot their names.
That's Tracy K. Smith reading Enem by Jericho Brown. Tell us about this poem. Why is it in the anthology?
Well, this is the anthology of poems that I brought with me on each of these trips. And the Library of Congress bought copies very generously and gave them out to everyone. And it's made up of poems that speak to different aspects of American life, personal, private, shared, from different perspectives. And this poem speaks to me so much because of the way that it takes the different generations that we descend from into consideration. And it centers what I think of as the old folk, a way of life that some of us remember that was a kind of sustenance for so many communities, and many of whom are now gone. I've shared this poem in lots of different places, and there's a line that speaks to so many, you know, always a line that speaks to someone. The idea that, you know, some of their children were not their children. Someone would say, oh, I understand this because I was raised by, you know, this grandmother who felt like my mother. Or they fed families with change. And someone will say, oh, I always remember how my mother kind of brought these miracles about every time that, you know, it was time to take care of us. She somehow did it on a shoestring. I always get sort of choked up at the end of the poem, that huge shift that happens. Then another century came. People like me forgot their names. That sense of gratitude and also I think a little bit of shame at the way we turn our back on time, eras, people, traditions, just in the business of living our lives. Mm. Poems like this one can help us go back and say thank you And it can also bring about the feeling of people and experiences that are gone.
So that reconnection that you say poetry can so profoundly do, there's a moment from an event that you hosted in South Dakota. And again, the Library of Congress recorded a lot of these gatherings. So I want to play a tape from one of those moments. And we're about to hear a woman named Laura Venjon. She came to an event in South Dakota, and she talked about how one of your poems really evoked powerful feelings in her about her late husband.
I lost my husband in March, and there was one poem in there that just, oh, I just picked it out of the blue. That was my first poem. I just read her book, and it's like smelling the sheets. This is probably about someone going to Afghanistan, and the husband was deployed for a year, and you're still smelling the sheets. Well, I'm still going through the throes of separation, and it's, but poetry is, it brings the heart into the people, and that's what the poet has to do, is get your thoughts across.
Laura can hardly make it through that.
Yeah, she's actually referring to a poem called The Long Deployment by a poet named Jean Dubreuil. And yeah, it seems to be written from the perspective of a wife whose husband has been deployed. And it's a beautiful and troubling poem about longing, memory, and absence, all the different kinds of absence that we endure. It's amazing that someone else's vocabulary and imagination can speak to and even sometimes seem to speak for these really deep and almost wordless feelings that we all live with. I think that's one of the things that I'm most grateful to poetry for. It allows me to go in to my heart, into my life with a new tool, a way of saying, yes, that's how I feel. This is what I'm going to call it. These are the words and these are the phrases that are going to help me to live better with this feeling.
Mm. Let's go to Dixie, who's calling from Coral Springs, Florida. Dixie, you're on the air.
Hello, everyone. Thank you so much for taking my call, and what a pleasure. Megan, just great broadcast. I just want to comment on a couple of things that Tracy said. I was listening, and I came in right at the point when you were talking about your dad and the poem you had written, and that that he was larger, that you were seeking for the space where he was larger than his human self. And that so epitomizes what poetry is overall. I love also that you just said that these almost wordless feelings, that you capture these almost wordless feelings. I'm a poet. I'm actually sitting with another poet, and I know we feel the same way. So we're excited and thrilled that you are bringing poetry, and not just keeping it alive, but bringing it to more and more people. Because as the woman said who lost her husband, that poetry brings a heart into the people. Mm-hmm. So thank you very much.
Oh, thank you. Thanks. Yeah, you know, there's this idea out there that poetry is this kind of a frivolous endeavor. It's about saying things in a decorative way, making things difficult and hiding things, or that it's a luxury that not all of us can afford to turn our attention to. But I really disagree. I feel that, you know, as we've been talking about it, poetry gives us real and better access to our deep feelings, our feelings of joy and trouble. And I think it also creates a path where we can kind of reconnect with our real selves, because we don't always live from the position of our real self. We're putting on the right face for the right circumstance. And so to be invited back into what is true and enduring, I think that's something that we need.
Mm-hmm. Well, Dixie, thank you for your call. Let's go to Karen, who's calling from Lexington, Massachusetts. Karen, you're on the air.
Oh, hi there. I'm blown away. This is the first time that I've heard about Tracy K. Smith or had the pleasure to hear you read your work and talk about it. and I don't want to take up too much time, but I just want to share with you the impact of the experience I've had listening to the two of you engage. And I feel that you are a placemaker, and that you help others who wish to take the time to slow down with you, mm-hmm. and your words and your explorations and digging and whatever you're swimming, you're floating, you're whatever kind of way that you find yourself feeling as you find your words, that it's about creating a space and holding a space and spending time tenderly exploring and discovering that space.
Mm-hmm.
And it's beautiful. I'm in the process right now of making a lot of changes in my life. And this moment on NPR has been incredibly powerful. I hope that that was comprehensible.
Yeah. Well,
it was straight from the heart, and sometimes I get goopy.
Karen, I have to say, it feels like an incredible privilege to share this moment with you. So thank you. Thank you so much for sharing that with us. Tracy, you want to respond to what Karen said?
Well, I love that you're talking about space and making and guarding this space that, you know, we all have it. And I think that we don't always give it priority. But of course, it's at the very heart of who we are. I like that. I don't know. I just like that this is something you're making us think about. Thank you.
Well, so a couple of years ago, maybe a year and three quarters ago, there was a terrific article about you in the New York Times. And you said something in there that I know a lot of people have asked you about, but it seems even more urgent now than ever. You said that more than anything now, you're looking for the kind of silence that yields clarity, right? Mm-hmm. And I mean, there's such a cacophony that we're immersed in. And then you said, I'm interested in the way our voices sound when we dip below the decibel level of politics. So I'm wondering, as you traveled the country, Alaska, North Dakota, Kentucky, all places and spaces, meeting many, many Americans, do our voices sound more similar than we think when we dip below that decibel level?
I really wanted the answer to be yes. And I said, okay, I'm going to do this project and see what the answer actually is. And I do believe that the answer is yes. I wasn't arguing policy with people. I was talking about the aspects of individual lived life that come up in poems. Some of those things speak to policy, you know, immigration. What does it feel like to be a stranger in a place where you may not be welcome? Or thinking about language and community and home. We weren't categorizing or defending or justifying practices. We were saying, this person seems to be feeling this thing. And you know what? The last time I felt this thing, it was like this. We all do sound very similar when we're speaking at that level, not as an authority, not as the representative of a perspective, but as somebody who is alive on this earth. I was in a lot of places where I know the values that people hold are different from mine. And yet, I feel like we were able to enter into the nuances that sit beneath the ways that sometimes difference can feel threatening. We were able to say, oh, you see that way. That's interesting. I hadn't thought about it like that. I actually see it like this. To me, that seems like where we ought to spend most of our time. But of course, we're encouraged to do otherwise because we're encouraged to have a brand. We're encouraged to sort of talk back to or shout down people who don't celebrate our ideas, and we're encouraged to, you know, kind of like judge. But if those temptations were kind of like sidelined a little bit, I think we'd actually feel so much better, even in our difference.
Mm-hmm. I keep thinking what you said at the top of the show about achieving an impossible kind of listening. It's not as impossible as we think.
Right. Yeah. We just, like the last caller said, we just have to make space for it.
Yeah.
We have to say, okay, the mode that I find myself in when I'm on social media is one mode, but there's another that I want to practice with others, and it feels like this.
Mm-hmm. Well, we've got about 2 minutes left. I was going to, darn it, I think I've run out of time because I was going to ask you to read another poem, but I don't want you to have to rush through it here.
Okay.
So I will tell folks that they should pick up Wade in the Water, your one of your more recent anthologies, because we were going to have you read An Old Story, which is a fabulous poem. Mm-hmm. How long do you think it takes you to read it?
I don't know. I could probably read it in 1 minute, or I could talk to you about it. What do you think?
Read it. Can you do
okay.
it?
Okay.
Okay.
An Old Story. We were made to understand it would be terrible. Every small want, every niggling urge, every hate, swollen to a kind of epic wind. Livid the land and ravaged like a rageful dream. The worst in us having taken over and broken the rest utterly down. A long age passed, when at last we knew how little would survive us, how little we had mended or built that was not now lost. Something large and old awoke. And then our singing brought on a different manner of weather. Then animals, long believed gone, crept down from trees. We took new stock of one another. We wept to be reminded of such color.
Tracy K. Smith, reading An Old Story from her anthology Wade in the Water. And Tracy, thank you so much for helping us take new stock of one another.
Thanks, Meghna. It's been a real pleasure.
It has been such an honor to speak with you. We've done it a couple of times, and I hope you come back again sometime soon.
I love that.
Well, Tracy K. Smith served two terms as U.S. Poet Laureate from 2017 to 2019. She's also a professor of the humanities and chair of the Lewis Center for the Arts at Princeton University. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. This is On Point.